go.
Put on the headphones.
Yeah. Hey, where they at? Yup, got you. We good. Boom.
Man, here with Ray Dogg, Benzino.
Hey, what's up, Ryan?
What's good, man?
Good, brother. Are we going? We on.
We're recording. Yeah, let's go. Man, like, you know, you have, like, you know, amazing legacy in hip hop. Yeah. You know, like,
appreciate it.
They try to put like dirt on your name, like, you know, but like the real people that know, like, you know what I mean? If you really, like, you know, like, are from the streets, like, you know, really, like, you know, invested in this culture, mm-hmm. like, I feel like, you know, you got to put some respect on your name, man.
Appreciate it.
You know, man, like,
appreciate that.
You're from, like, you know, a spot, you know, Boston.
Boston,
you
know, Mass, yeah. Roxbury, Dorchester.
Man, like, you know, when I think of, like, Boston, I think, like, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, people would think, like, you know, there's not a lot of black people in Boston.
Nah, well, there's a good amount of black people.
Yeah.
It's just segregated, to this day, still segregated.
Right, in that little area, Wait, Mattapan.
Roxbury, Dorchester, South End, Jamaica Plain. Right. You know, now, as time moved on, people, you know, from the inner cities have branched out all over the place now.
Right.
In Massachusetts. But there was just once a time where all the blacks were just in that area of Boston. And Boston's it's a pretty white town, you know, as far as, you know,
right.
it has your Irish, that's in South Boston. It has your Italians, that's in North End and in East Boston at the time. You know, Jewish people were all on West and Newton and Braintree. And, you know, it was little, maybe 10, 15-mile radius.
When I think about Boston.
Black Boston, you know.
I think about, like, you know, racism.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know.
Yeah.
Bill Russell, when he played for the Boston Celtics, you know.
Hated Boston.
Yeah, they burned crosses in his front lawn. Like,
hated
you
Boston.
Know, you know, I also, like, you know, think about, like, you know, the legacy for black people, you know. Malcolm X, like, you know, that's where he
came from. Boston. Martin Luther King went to Boston University.
Yep.
People don't realize that. Farrakhan, you know, was grew up in Roxbury. I mean, you know, a lot of our revolutionists and our great black minds and men that stuck up for the culture, stuck up for black people and the rights and the civil rights of black people, the basic rights. The humanely rights, they all came through Boston because I think what gave them that drive was to see how unfair Boston was.
Yeah,
as a city.
Every major movement has, like, you know, came from Boston's.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's pretty much like, you know, the home of liberalism. Like, you know.
Well, you know, you go to Harvard and everything is the birds and the trees and people sitting on the lawns and you'll see people smoking joints and nobody's saying nothing. This is like in the 80s and shit. Like, but, and MIT and everybody's cool.
Right.
There's no crime and everything. But you go a couple of miles to Roxbury and dudes is getting. We was averaging 120 murders a year in Boston, and say like 80% was coming from just that black area of 10 to 15 mile radius.
No, it's a serious place. I lived, you know, in Boston for a minute. Like, you know,
okay.
I went to Harvard Graduate School, and I've been to Middle Sex.
Dave,
yeah,
my
went
partner.
To Harvard. Yeah, I
used to go up there. Let me tell you the truth. We get back, but we used to go to see when me and Dave met. I hadn't been, you know, I've been to Cambridge a few times, but there was no reason for me to go to Cambridge unless we was robbing somebody, unless we was breaking and entering. You know, we was doing house invasions, all kind of shit. When me and Dave got together, and he went to Harvard, and then I went over there to go see him. It was like a different world. It was more peaceful. So even being from then, and I can remember, I was like, I kind of felt that little bit of peace. Like, and it felt good. Like, because you got to understand, like, Boston is everyday, hectic, wild, ganged out.
Right.
And it's ganged out in an area that if you got beef with somebody, you know where they at. There's no question about it. It is not too hard to find out where somebody stay in Boston because everybody's all up on top of each other. So a lot of bodies, a lot of murders, a lot of chaos, you know, a lot of, I'm saying, fun shit and as far as growing up too, but the crazy shit was just a regular thing. So when I went to Harvard, it was just like, man, I really recognized the environment. Like, as soon as you cross that bridge, you see, like, you know, white guys rowing canoes. And
right.
Shit,
Charlestown River.
Charlestown River. And the first album cover we did, the Almighty RSO, we had our guns and we stood on that side and we took our album. That's our first album. The first was a single at the time. It was called The Greatest Show on Earth. And we had Adidas suits on, and you know, rest in peace to Big T, rest in peace to Kevsky. But you know, Free Orange Man. But you know, that cover meant so much to us because it was our skyline. So from the Charles River on the Cambridge side, you could see the Prudential Building and the skyline. And yeah, we took our picture like right there. So that'll always mean something to me, you know.
Man, the Almighty RSO, like, you can't mention like Boston hip hop without mentioning, you know, that group. And like, I think, like, you know, one of the interesting things is like, you know, the reputation like in the streets that you guys had, like, you know, like it was just, well, for,
I mean, you're fighting gangs and you're fighting the system and you're fighting white people sometimes. I mean, you know, I've been stabbed up by white guys going to school. You know, my first year of Boston Tech school, it was like a little race thing on the bus two days in a row, and I got kicked out of Boston Tech. It was cool because I wanted to go to the Burke anyways. Boston Tech was like a white and black school, but you had to take a test to get into. My mother, you know, I took, you know, I love my mom, rest in peace, so I took the test for her. I passed it, killed it. I was always smart, but I just, you know, at that time, that's, you know, I was heavy and selling drugs in the streets. So I remember we was on a bus, and the buses weren't the school buses. They were the regular buses, but they was picking, it was lined up to pick kids up. And Boston Tech was smack dab in Roxbury. It was a huge school, but white kids, a lot of white kids went there. And, you know, I just remembered my first year, you know, we were sharing the bus with white guys, and something happened, and boom, we fighting on the bus. It's like about 10, 15, and 10. The bus is full, and we going crazy. The next day, they came with knives and shit.
Wow.
Yeah, they cut me a little bit. And, yeah, man, like, you know, we were segregated from white people. You know, we didn't, if black people went to South Boston or somewhere, then they'd get chased out or risk losing their life or risk getting stomped out. And it'd be the same thing with a white dude if he come through Four Corners or Grove Hall or Dudley. He risked getting stomped out. So that's the relationship that Boston had as far as race. I mean, this is late 70s, early 80s. This isn't the 60s and 50s, you know what I'm saying?
Right, like, you know, like, I have had my racist experience in Boston, like, you know, even today, like, you know, but I love Massachusetts, though. It's a great place to live. I feel like it's,
you know, me, you know, I love Boston because of all the guys I came up with. See, I love them. I can't really say I love Boston. I had to really, like, evaluate that for a minute when I said, man, I love Boston. Like, I don't know if I love Boston anymore. I thought I did. That was part of the conditioning, but when I look at all the bad and all the still to this day and all the racism, and there's no way I could be at the age I am and the maturity I am, and knowing what I know now, I could with a straight face say I love Boston, because I Boston is bad, man. Boston, you know, for a black man to this day, you know, you can't have too much. They won't allow you to have too much as a black man in Boston. They just won't.
Yeah.
You got to be real quiet about it.
Like, you know, systemic racism is, you know, pervasive. And, like, you know, it's throughout society. Like, you know, not just in Boston, though. Like, I see that, like, you know, even with the music industry, we're going to touch on that. But, like, the Almighty RSO, like, you know, like, can you talk about, like, you know, just, like, you know, starting it and, like, you know, how, like, well, you got to deal with Tommy Boy?
I mean, you know, well, around that time, you know, I was coming back and forth from New York from my grandparents' house. My grandmother stayed in Brooklyn. She was the Puerto Rican grandmother. Couldn't speak English. So when I go over there, she's talking to me in Spanish. And if I don't answer back, she got this big-ass ruler. Yeah, man. Like, shit, I know that shit was more than a fucking 12 inches because that motherfucker was like this. She used to tear my, put it out. Every time I wouldn't understand Spanish, so I told my father, Dad, can I go to Grandpa's house? You know what I'm saying? So my grandfather stayed in the Bronx, and he had a son that was like a year or two older than me. And Eddie was the one that taught me how to, I was 11, 12 years old, 77, 76, taught me how to scratch right in the basement of the Bronx, which was really a few blocks over from Sedgwick, which Kool Herc founded hip hop.
Right, yeah.
I was on Cedar Avenue, yeah. And Sedgwick Avenue was 5 minutes away. So my uncle had a rap group called Three the Hard Way, And, you know, that's the first time I really started seeing beautiful, beautiful Spanish women in the Bronx. Yeah. I just was like, you know, I'm 11, 12, so I'm just now like, you know, so I just was in awe of everything that he was doing with hip hop. You know, he had a rap group, he's scratching, and the girls was loving him. This one chick named Carmen was so, oh my God. So I'll never forget. That's what I'm saying. See, there's certain things that you're not going to forget. In that moment, you know, musically, it really wasn't nothing going on that made me excited. You know, disco was out and funk, of course, you know what I'm saying? Jazz, you know, and even Bob Marley with reggae. But when hip hop came, it just was like, yo, this shit here is like, and it just, you know, in New York, it just started taking over the hoods and the airwaves, because hip hop comes from the streets. Hip hop comes from, and I tell people this, when you look at the South Bronx back in the 70s, right? Probably you wouldn't even believe that was America. Like, that shit looked like a fucking war zone, bro. Like, I mean, like, this.
It still looks pretty bad, like, today.
Nothing like it did then.
Okay.
And the point I'm trying to make is that hip hop was birthed from those streets.
Okay.
And those abandoned, burnt out buildings, right, and those drug infested, and it was horrible. And, you know, that was the time.
It's kind of hard to imagine it looks worse than it does today. That's crazy.
I mean, it was a time where people from the Caribbean were trying to leave the Caribbean and come to New York for jobs. So they had to kind of settle in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, right, in the poor neighborhoods. You know what I'm saying? These are the neighborhoods that was called the ghettos, you know, because the Jewish was once in those neighborhoods.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the poor people, that was supposed to be the poor people. And then we inherited that as the new poor people. So the worst conditions ever, hip hop came out of the worst conditions ever from black people. And of course, Latino people was all together, Puerto Rican, black. So, you know, Puerto Rican people had a lot to do with hip hop in New York, whether people want to believe that or not. Sure, it was pushed by the blacks more, but there were Puerto Ricans right along with the brothers. And, you know, I went back to Boston, and, you know, because Boston's only 2.5 hours away, and I just was like, I love this shit. I seen Wild Style movie a few years after that, and Crush Groovin', and then Run DMC. Then I went to the Fresh Fest, and it just was like, you know, I made my own rap group. And then there was guys that was rapping in the hood already, so, you know, I kind of had like a little advantage because I was back, because I had family in New York, and that's the birthplace. So anything that Boston or Connecticut or Rhode Island's getting, they're getting it later. They're getting shit later. It's not like, you know what I'm saying? It's not too much later, but it's still later. The thing about hip hop is whatever's the freshest. There was no internet, so you had to, if the Mecca was New York, then if you're in New York, then you're where the pie is baking. You know what I'm saying? Right. You're not getting it shipped. You're not buying it from the, you're right there where it's going on. And, you know, I try to be up in New York as much as possible, and I brought what I seen from New York and what they was doing, the block parties, rapping in the parks, because that's what hip hop was at first. It wasn't nothing else but that. It was the parks, DJs, and a microphone, and then you had your break dancers rolling out the linoleum. You had the guys painting graffiti on that was one big thing. See, that was.
Those the shows I seen, like, some of the videos online. You guys were doing, like, you know, some really, like, dope shows, man. Like,
was we practiced.
Doing pyrotechnics?
He was Def Jeff then, but he would put the fire. And I came up with it, you know what I'm saying? But I came up with, you get the lighter fluid, put it on the part of the album. Of the, you know, where the paper is, right? And you figure you got about a couple of minutes before the album is gonna bend up from the heat. But because of the paper, it'll stay longer. And then put the lighter fluid on there, because it burns lightly, you know what I'm saying? And then it would come up, and then he would jam, Master J. You know, he would do that. We got videos of him doing that. And like, but that's what I'm saying. Like, the problem with hip hop today is they'll never know that feeling of going out to the park at night with 1,000 people there with huge speakers and people getting on the mic to a DJ cutting a beat. I feel sorry for anybody who never failed that, because that, believe me, there'll never be, I don't care how much money, whatever you do, that is the feeling that if you didn't fail that, then unfortunately you just didn't feel the essence and the realness of what hip hop was. And that's when no money was involved. You know, just going on, unless you sold drugs at the park.
Man, you guys end up signing to Tommy Boy.
We used to do shows with RSO, we're battling, we're at the Shavu Roller Rink, other crews are coming in, we got a beatbox, we got a DJ, we got five rappers, I mean, we got dancers and shit, like, I think we was 11 deep at one time. But Dave, at that time, would bring A&R guys from New York, because the Source office was based in New York at that time, so he was dealing with different labels. And a guy, I forgot his last name, but his first name was Eric, and he was the engineer, and this was Tommy Bush, like 1988, 89. He came and seen us open up for Naughty by Nature, and we killed it, like destroyed it. Like there was like 700-800 people in there. And man, we, this is when they did give shows in Boston. It was still early, you know what I'm saying, before Boston shut that shit down. But he came, we got the deal from Tommy Boy. We made a song called One in the Chamber.
Right. And the patrolman unit sued you guys for that song, like, you know, basically, yeah, with Oliver North. Isn't that ironic?
Well, I mean, it was election year at that time. And, you know, Reagan was getting ready, you know, I think he'd get reelected. But Oliver North was down with Reagan at the time. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, Oliver North was down with the Contra, with the whole cocaine
thing. Iran-Contra, yeah.
That's right. So he was a general in the Army. And then he ended up turning kind of like CIA spy-ish. I don't really know what his role was. Long story short, we made One in the Chamber. It was about police that they killed. You know, that police in the early 80s was getting, in late 70s, was getting away with killing more black men in Boston than probably any other city in America, right, at that time. Just slaughtering niggas and getting away with it. There was two particular cases that we rapped about. Christopher Rogers, and I still don't know their names. Christopher Rogers, and I'm going to tell you a story. Backstory with all this that almost made me cry. Christopher Rogers, he was under a car and got and the police shot under the car and killed him, 17 years old. Like, went under the car and shot him. No gun or nothing. Had shorts on, a t-shirt in the summertime. Nathaniel Lackland was in Jamaica Plain Projects. Got shot twice in the back of the head in the hallway of the project building. Twice in the back of his head. And the police got off on that. Now, just recently, his son hit me up. His son's locked up. And he thanked me, you know. Nathaniel Lackland's son, he had hit me on my DM to say he's locked up. He said he's coming home soon, but he thanked me. Now, imagine that. I made that song like in 88. That was how many fucking years ago? He probably wasn't even born. And he thanked me. So it's just crazy how things are. But when I watch people marching, because I went to Ferguson and marched, and I'm heavy into stuff like that.
Yeah, I hear that in your music, you know, and that's why, like, I feel like, you know, the Eminem, like, this is, they don't resonate with me. Like, you know, I feel like, I would say, like, you know what I mean, I enjoy his music. I think he's a talented MC, but, like, you're on the same level. You're a dope MC. Like,
appreciate that. I mean, you know, Rye, man, my thing is, like, doing all these interviews and stuff, and when that comes up, it really made me realize something I never realized before. You know, as you get older, you get wiser, and it's true. I'm wiser. But everything that I went through in Boston, how I grew up, shaped me to feel this way about Eminem.
I didn't know that five years ago. I feel like you. I mean, I really enjoy your worldview, because you see the world like a lot of the similar way that I do. And I like kind of just like looking, because I feel like the media kind of portrayed your situation, but then like kind of like looking at it and hearing your perspective, and I feel like a lot of times like your perspective really doesn't get to be told. And I think like now, like, you know, it's getting like people, anybody like who would really take the time, like I saw the Adam 22 interview and, you know, Tasha K, like, you know, these are really intelligent people.
Right.
And they like, are, you know, you recognize it. And you know, it's like, if you really look more in depth at this story, like what's really going on is, like, you know, it's these people in the music industry that are kind of trying to paint you a certain way and push a narrative.
Okay, well, let's pause that for a second. Let's take the Diddy situation, right?
Yeah.
When you look at what's happening with the internet, powers that be, the people that run shit, have seen how great of a tool it could be to control everybody and basically wipe us out. And that's what they're doing now. Like, when you look at the Diddy situation, he's being tried based on three civil suit paperwork, meaning Cassie's, that paperwork that they filed, okay. Feds take that and look at that. The new suit, 30 years ago, which this girl that we still don't know who she is, said that he raped her in a studio 30 years ago. That's just now coming out. Though that paperwork, they're reading that. And then Little Rod.
Yeah.
Little Rod's paperwork. So they're basing it off of civil suits. None of those have anything to do with criminal. These ain't criminal charges that any three of these people brought up. Cassie maybe could have, but she didn't. She wanted the money. This other woman, maybe she could have. She didn't. She wants the money. We all know Lil Rod wants the money. He's asking for $30 million. So once you start asking for money, that becomes civil. Criminal is over here. What do we know? We know that Puffy had parties. He threw parties, okay? I was never at any of his parties. I never got invited. If I got invited, I probably would have went like thousands of other celebrities, rappers, athletes, politicians, and heavy hitters have been through. He was the party thrower, and everybody comes to the party. That's just what it is.
100%. Okay. It was a big deal.
Like, he's been doing that whole career. Yeah. Parties. Puffy's been like a promoter his entire career, yeah, other than being
CEO. Yeah, when he was CEO, at Howard, he was throwing parties.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So here we go. And look at the things that they're harping on. Like something like in the hood, like, okay, me and you, let's say we had a hotel, and he says, yeah, we want to get some strippers, man. Come over, man, and have some fun. In our mind, we're going to go, yeah, let's get some strippers. We got some money. But guess what? That's prostitution. So they're looking at that as something that is done every day in our culture, every minute, every day. Yeah. Now they're saying, well, that's prostitution and they're sex workers and this is, all right. But they can't prove that. And if everybody's of age, there's nothing that's going to violate any more of that other than soliciting prostitution. Okay. In Miami, the legal limit is 18 years old. Now, in the country, a lot of states are 16. So America's perverted anyways. Yeah. Not just Oklahoma.
Yeah, this is
South Carolina, Atlanta. Like it's a lot of places that are 16 years old. Yeah. But Miami happens to be 18. So all these parties Diddy had, we know he's the party man. Again, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of celebrities and well-known people have been to these parties. Yeah. All right. So the only thing that they're going off of, if it's just the civil stuff, they don't know if that's true or not. The little Rod stuff ended up that the tape that he said was Stevie, that been put out. And the guy that was in the tape, who looked just like Stevie, could be Stevie's brother, the gay porn star, said it was him. That happened 2 years ago, about a couple of years ago. So by Rod putting that in, that's false information right there. So for them to be smearing that all over the place is wrong. Because I could say anything I want to say and put it in there. And don't get me wrong, he made a 700 page. They went to work on that. But when you have, like, because that was false, now it's going to make like, well, now there's going to be holes in almost everything else he said in there. That's going to be so. They said Young Miami brought drugs. And can they prove that? They can't prove that. They got pictures.
Right, the pink cocaine.
Can you prove that? No, you can't prove that. There is no proof in that. So just think about it. His house got raided a week ago, 5 days ago. Three raids with tanks and everything. Has this man been arrested? I was reading a New York Post article. Long article, and they basically reported on the Diddy thing and the house raids. And that's the New York Post. It's a white newspaper, okay? At the end of it, it said, hey, if you know anything about this, give us a call. Call this. The New York Post never does that, unless it's some local. But on a big story like this, you almost never see call us. When you see shit like that, that means they ain't got nothing.
Yeah, like, it doesn't seem because there's not no criminal charges. Yeah. Like, you know,
and it's sad that black people have already hung them. have already thrown them away. Yeah. You see, that's what's fucked up about. They've conditioned us so fucked up. And all they do is sit back and laugh. See, me dealing with children, and that's horrible. And you should go to jail if you're fucking around with kids. That's horrible. But shit that's consent, which most of this shit is, by adults, nah. You see, the entertainment business, there's a lot of people that want to get around guys. I've been around it my whole life because they're on stage or they're the big. And there's a lot of women that have no problem taking off their clothes and sleeping with 100%. A man who's on stage. And that goes on every day, from the beginning of time. Okay? So now, black men are being prosecuted for this. And everybody else is just sitting back laughing. And in Diddy's case, ain't nobody saying nothing. Now, I can't blame nobody not to say nothing. All them hundreds of people who were at the parties, I can't blame them because they're scared and they don't want to be involved. But if they don't, if no woman, in the Epstein case, there was a whole shitload of women that came in and said, they said, the damn prince got pictures with the young girl with him and he still ain't locked up. The guy from England. So, like, what the fuck is going on here? You could see it's they're just fucking with us. They're just trying to destroy us. And when I see black people I have to stay away from the comments, man. I do, because it is the worst of our societies, and the worst of our society and our culture is in those motherfucking comments. The worst of black culture is in those motherfucking comments, and I have to stay away from it because them people are lost. They're lost at a degree that is so dangerous and alarming that, man, like, you can you imagine Malcolm and Martin and Huey and all these guys that done died for this to be looking at the behavior of what's going on now?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, man? It's crazy.
One of the things and stuff I don't like about, like, the internet, because, like, you know, you have
that people, is the thing, not the one thing. That's what, to me, throw it all away, because that's what's going to destroy us. It's already happening, and it's
already. I would say another thing is, like, people coming into the culture who really and making, like, you know, comments and putting out, like, it's factual information, like, you know, just like.
But forget about them, though, right? Yeah. It's the ones who are in the culture.
Yeah.
Fuck them. We can't expect nothing from them. You can't expect nothing. So don't save your emotions on them and give it to the motherfuckers who's us. Yeah.
For sure,
like, bro,
for sure.
Like, we're our worst enemies. They're just sitting back laughing. They don't got to do nothing to us. They just got to let us do it to each other. And that's what's going on right now. And the internet, listen, man, listen, bro, the internet is the tool of white supremacy. And
most definitely.
And they are, and they have us going again. I just came from Detroit and just shot a video at Eminem's restaurant. And
Rap Elvis.
And you would have thought that I really broken some law or really did some wrong shit or just went to Detroit and I can understand it from the millions of white people who just hate me because I don't like Eminem's music. But the black people, the amount of black people that are riding for him when this man has really never went through them hoods and them streets. And it fucking bothers me because Detroit is such an amazing city with strong black people. And I've always admired Detroit from back in the day because at one point Detroit was the black Mecca of America. And what these people have done to it and what's going on up there now is, to me, a travesty. Well, and we're just sitting back and I think they're finding excuses to be mad at other shit when they don't want to really deal with the real fucking problem.
I think, like, you know, in Detroit that there's kind of like an unsaid rule of, like, not saying anything bad about Eminem. And I think that's, like, you know, for the idea because,
how,
like,
can that be an unsaid rule of a place that has blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks of abandoned homes, kids getting murdered every day. Kids, I've never seen, until I started following these crime in Detroit and everything, I'm talking about three kids. You know, it's almost like two or three kids a day going missing up there of color. Like, bro, like, fuck that unwritten rule. Don't say that, man. Eminem owes that city in a big way. And yes, he owes that city in a big way. Yes, 100%. Like he has a lot of money. Him, Rosenberg, Jimmy Iovine, Dre. They owe Detroit and that neighborhood, the city of Detroit and them neighborhoods, they owe them. And they, and they got the money to do it. You think if I had their money, I wouldn't do it?
100%, yeah. Like
what
I,
the fuck, man?
I do question it, like, a lot of times where it's like,
hold
I
on, 1 second. Hey, Joe, I'm right in the middle of this podcast. As soon as I'm done, I'm going to call you. All right, brother. This is my man, Joe Philly. Love, bro. Yeah.
I do question that sometimes, like, you know, where you see, like, you know, black hip-hop artists, like, you know, Dr. Dre, he donated to USC, but he did, I don't see.
No,
like,
no, no, they all have. Listen, I'm sure, yeah, Dre, yeah. Listen, one thing about me, I give props to what it is. Dr. Dre, one of the greatest producers in hip-hop history, and just one of the greatest producers in history of music, all right? I'm a big fan, all right? And I'm sure he's put a lot of money in places that we don't know, and it's none of our business.
Yeah.
I'm saying Detroit. I'm saying the Eminem phenomenon, nothing Dre did has made more money as the Eminem phenomenon. So I'm talking that pool of people that benefited, the Jimmy Iovine, Paul Rosenberg, Eminem, Dre. I'm sure they could put $20 million together. You know what $20 million would do for that city right now? You know what I'm saying? Like a little $20 million, $50 million, little 20. That ain't shit. That shit comes back in Eminem's publishing like this. You know what I'm saying? Like mechanicals like that. And I'm not saying anything getting in guys' pockets, but when I had my millions, oh, I gave it away. I gave a lot of it away. My riches, half of it. It is what it is. They don't have to. That's just my opinion. And for Detroit, as far as the way the city is, to be in shape like that, you know what I'm saying? Like, it to me, they need to do more. And that's just my opinion. I don't give a fuck what anybody else thinks.
No, like, I think, like, you know, it's important, like, payback, like, you know, to the culture, especially, like, the city that you're from. I don't know, like, you know, what he has done. Like, you know, I haven't heard anything.
He's fed the homeless. He's giving coats. Listen, bro. I know drug dealers that feed the homeless and give coats, bro. I'm talking a whole different level of help that city needs, that you guys have made money off of the blood and struggle of Detroit and of the world for that matter, and give it to Detroit. Fuck everybody else. Give it to Detroit.
And that's a great point. I mean, I think you make a lot of great points about, like, you know, one of the things that really bothered me was, like, you know, the racist tapes and, like, you know, just like the fact that, you know, you say that he's like 21, like when he actually made those tapes, and not 16. And
let's say he was 16.
Yeah.
Let's take August. We're not debate. Say he's 16. Did you know what Eminem looked like at 16?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
I was going to tell you to Google it.
Yeah.
Do you really think Eminem even had a girlfriend, never alone a black girlfriend at 16, the way he looked? Eminem was an awkward, and no disrespect, he just was, a lot of kids that age are awkward and they're not going to be into girls. That's not disrespecting. And I don't even want him to take that as a disrespect. But they lied when they said he had a black girlfriend. And that's disrespect. 16 years old, that boy wasn't thinking about no pussy. And surely no chicks was going to date him. Surely no black chick was going to date him at 16. Pull up Eminem at 16. Google Eminem at 16 years old and look what Eminem looks like and the type of shit digging in his nose. My man Champ Town got a whole documentary on. I think it's on Tubi or something about Eminem. And the kid's digging in his old. We don't do that shit, bro. You know what I'm saying? We're not into that. That, you know what I'm saying? Hey, tweets his own, have you? But that's not the fly shit that young black girls are into. So I doubted if a black girl dated him at 16. So they lied. They had a lie. Because, shit, what was they going to do? They got all this money. They see all the money that they're getting ready to make. This could derail the whole thing. If the internet was out, he was over with. But it wasn't. And they put their publicists on it, who make a lot of money, and they spun it. And they said, you ain't even going to say nothing in person. Just go make a song. He makes Yellow Brick Road. The fuck out of here.
Right, and somehow, like, you know, for bringing this to light, like, you end up being turned the villain.
Again, it's the black people that, like, yo, buddy, I'd be wondering, like, yeah, my brothers, like, are lucky you can't get slapped through the fucking internet.
I think, man. You know, that tape is disgusting, you know, and, like, I understand, like, you know, like, that people make mistakes in life. Like, you know, we've all made mistakes. People are human and stuff, but, like, this...
Do you know his reactors? The guy that reacts, the black guy, not no life Shaq. I mean, he's a nut hugger extraordinaire. But the one Richie, I don't even know his fucking name.
You talking about Royce the 5'9"?
No, not him. You know that there's a tape going around with Royce and Diddy on a private jet like 17 years ago.
I wouldn't be surprised. And they was drunk. And
I just seen that. Someone just sent me that. No, I forgot his name, but you could see that these guys react. I mean, I've never seen a black man in my life. Like, it's so sad to watch this black man and the way he worships and the way he goes hard for Eminem.
It's sick when black people defend that tape. Like, you know, and like, you know, and excuse it. I mean, I think, like, you know, it's a clear example of like white supremacy. And, you know, to say, like, you know, that tape's not despicable and that he shouldn't, like, you know, as be long held as accountable
these,
for
as
it.
As long as these tap dancing coons is getting their comments and clicks by thousands of white people, they go with that. As long as they're getting a little bit of check from all the clicks they got, they go with that. They selling the whole fuck. These are the fuck niggas that been since the beginning of time. Since the nigga on Django is the Sam Jackson nigga. You know what I'm saying? What was his name in Django? The Sam Jackson? What was it?
Oh, a Fetchit? I know you're talking about the Sam Jackson
character. What was his name? Because that's who these niggas, that's what I'm going to call these niggas from now on.
Stephen? It was like
Stevenson.
Stephen. He was like Stephen. Stephen.
See, you wouldn't have been like if you wasn't in Boston going through that shit and watching how you like you're treated as a second class citizen.
100%.
Like an inferior human being to these people, then you would on a daily basis on the news, everything you see around you, all opportunities are given to white people, all the jobs, the firemen, right. The police department, the politicians, they're all Irish. Like, bro, like you.
And that's kind of like, I feel like with Eminem, it seems like it's a clear example of like white privilege because like this all starts because he didn't get 5 mics for the Eminem show. Like this is like pretty much
I made sure he didn't. I did that.
And yeah, but like, you know,
the 5
like,
mic taker.
Yeah, but like I don't think like you know what I mean. Deserve 5 mics. Like you know what I'm saying. I'm not saying man. Like you know, like, and I feel though like you know what I'm saying. That's white privilege though. Like to be upset and start.
If somebody could tell me that album was just as good as Chronic or Nas's Illmatic, I would slap the dog shit out of them. Like that album, if you could go through song from song for song for song for song and say, yo, that shit is banging. I don't give a fuck who produced it, whatever, what. If you could put that song up to the Chronic, up to Illmatic, up to
Reasonable Doubt.
Fugees. Reasonable Doubt should have been 5 mics.
Yeah.
The Fugees should have been 5 mics.
Reasonable Doubt got 4 mics.
Reasonable Doubt should have been
4 mics.
Should have been 5 mics. I'm saying it right here on your podcast. Yeah. It should have been 5 mics. So same thing with the Fugees. Should have been 5 mics.
For sure. I mean, I feel 4 mics is respectable, but I don't feel like it deserved 5 mics.
Have you ever heard the Above the Law album?
Yeah.
That fucking album was amazing.
Yeah. For real. You know? Yeah.
If anybody out there, please get Living Like Hustlers Above the Law and every single fucking song you're going to... Bro, like you know what I'm saying? If somebody can tell me that Eminem's album... Now, he might have deserved a 4. You know what I'm saying? But every last one of them songs at that time, the culture could not listen to. Outkast's album should have got 5 too. I'm gonna say that here too. Those are all the albums that should have got.
But nobody owes you like you know 5 mics. Like you know and stuff. And I think like a lot of times like there's great hip hop artists that get overlooked that like you know in the culture and stuff and everything who are
like above great the law.
MCs. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. And they like, got overlooked,
know,
right?
And like you know, but like and they're not beeping with you. I'm sure there's like a number of artists that didn't get the mics. Like you know,
man.
And stuff
listen, and listen. My thing is this: like I want people to listen to that album,
yeah,
and go through every last one of those songs.
But now, like I feel.
He has a few songs on there.
No, of course.
But not all of them are dope. And that's what makes a 5 mic album. Right. A 5 mic got to be every single...
It's a classic album. This
not
is
one of
playable.
Them, not one of them tracks got to be whack or I don't know. Not one can be to be 5. And the bottom line is there was a few of those tracks in that album that you was like, nah, that just isn't what the culture is fucking with right now. Now, there was a few that was dope. There's not. Listen, I never said that. I like a few Eminem songs. I like Stan. I like Renegade, Lose Yourself, the one he did with Rihanna. These are joints that radio on this tune I can, you know what I'm saying? Like my kid who listened to, you know what I mean? Like, you know, but the majority of his catalog, no. I didn't like, I'm Sim Shady, I didn't like that. I didn't, there was a lot of shit that I didn't like, and it's okay.
But
that's
you,
not right.
But you know that would never happen with a black artist. Like, you know, like they wouldn't feel entitled. I feel like it's almost like that's a clear example of white privilege where, you know, like Trump.
And a clear example of niggas bowing the fuck down and fucking being conditioned like fucking slaves.
But
like, stop.
You know, Eminem, he always makes like disses about like Trump. But
you can't help it if some white's going to big their people up and they're going to go hard with them. We got to go hard for us. And that's the problem with it. We don't. I'm not even gonna complain about them. Go let them keep going hard because they're not gonna stop going hard for them. We gotta go hard for us and stop
100%.
And stop sacrificing us and stop turning our backs on us and stop playing each other and destroying each other and killing each other. Like what the fuck? Like I'm not even gonna be mad at no culture bigging them up. If they wanna keep bigging them up, then you know what? That's what they're supposed to do. The Jews got out of this situation because they bigged each other up. They stayed with each other. They fucked with each other. They bought in with each other. Whether it was right or wrong, I'm not here to debate it. What I'm saying was that's what they did. They turned it around. They bought land all around the country in Beverly Hills, in Miami. This land ended up being great land. They're making money. They still fuck with each other. You can go to the rabbi and get money from him. None of this shit happens here where we're at. The pastors, they taking all the money from niggas. They taking the money. They're not helping. They're not giving jobs. They're not doing shit. And I'm not saying all of them, but the majority of them are really just fucking over. It's us.
Man, it reminds me, like, you know, like Eminem, like in the music industry is similar, like, to what Pat Boone would do. You know, like, Pat Boone would come in and, like, you know, like, take black culture. Like
Elvis.
You know, yeah. It was like, you know. It's like, you know, I understand, like, you know, a lot of people probably say, like, you know, he makes original music. I'm not saying, like, he's not a dope MC, but, like, I see
new
your
kids
point
on
about,
the block.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, come on. What the and fuck was that?
But, I mean, like, you know, it's like put them at this pedestal.
The Backstreet
of like,
Boys.
Of, like, you know, and just because, it's just because there's
Christina Aguilera, more. Britney. We can, listen, pop music just came from R&B. It is what it is. We started putting melody and rhythm into shit, and then white people started singing over it, the Justin Timberlakes of the world, the Justin Biebers, and the next thing you know, they're the mega artists because there's more white people that's going to deal with them. The problem with that is that it's like they're not the ones who are just fuck with them and don't fuck with black people. They don't want to give us props for even making the music for it. They just want to keep condemning us. I don't like that. I got a fucking problem with that.
No, I do too. I think, like, you know, it's despicable and, like, it's getting to the point where it's like you're not going to have black rappers. And, like, I think...
Rap is in trouble. Hip-hop is officially in trouble. It really is.
Yeah, you touched on that on like, Die Another Day. I was telling you, man, that's like, yeah. You know, like, I feel like, you know, a lot of times, like, I listen to hip-hop. I listen to Eminem, like, you know, and, like, the other raps, beefs, he's obliterated people. He's never done that to you. Like, a lot of people say it, like, online, but I don't hear that when I listen to the music. And, like, I really,
man,
you know.
Man, I fuck with you. Can I, hold up. You know what? This is what I want people to do. Forget about Ben's. See, I didn't, this rap beef wasn't, see, I'm a revolutionist, too. And my word, my, Die Another Day was... Die Another Day was more than just a rap song, right? I'm going to read the lyrics without rapping it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right? Benzino lyrics.
It's, all right? It's amazing,
this is the first
bro.
Time I've ever done this, and I fuck with you heavy. And this is, I love this comment. Here we go. Lord help us, my people are being raped. Deliver me from evil, and I'll seal this devil's fate. Let's take a closer look at what's really happening. He wants you to believe it's all about rapping. And all I tried to do was open up my niggas' eyes. It wasn't about me and them. You just got to realize. It's just a smokescreen, my niggas. There's a bigger picture. I want the streets to pay attention because I'm riding with you. If credibility is what we here for, right, then why ain't the hood selling units no more? Meaning, and I'm going to break this down. Right. Like, first of all, well, actually, I broke it down with the next line. Labels acting like it's good because they say so. EPMD was gold with no radio, meaning with no radio play, 500,000 people was buying into hip-hop niggas. and niggas was selling a lot of fucking music and labels was getting a lot of money with no radio play. That means that there was no marketing budgets for promotion or nothing. Just the shit coming out and people just flocking to it. White, black, everybody was flocking to it. It didn't need radio. It didn't need all this money and all this special treatment. All right. Now it's time to turn to prophecy. Time's up. Because I believe, you know, the prophecy... I believe God gave us hip-hop to save black people. That's just how I believe.
I believe that too, yeah.
All right. Marshall Mathers got to die, rise up. Now, not him die personally, but the machine image, and the theory, way, the ideology, okay?
The way they're making him like the white Jesus, like, you know what I mean? Messiah, he's the greatest, and he's not. He's not. That's just facts. If you can't say, like, you know what I mean, and stuff or anything, he's the GOAT rapper, like, you're not living in reality.
All right. No choice. The only way we're going to turn this shit around is put this little bitch in the ground. And the so-called kings steady going at each other. And I'm looking at, like, well, damn. You know, I'm looking at the top niggas, the niggas who I love. I'm looking at Nas, Jay, and everybody. Biggie, Pop, and that. They going at each other. Why this motherfucker's just sitting making diss songs about black women, and he's the greatest.
Right.
Why ain't them niggas going at him? Why ain't Jay throw a couple of shots at him in Renegade? Why ain't Nas go at him? Especially, you know, because Nas is about his blackness. Why didn't they go at him? That always disappointed me, and I love them. I love Nas and Jay. I don't want people to think. But that particular situation always bothered me, like, If this is hip hop and he looks like, and he's supposed to be the number one and y'all are hearing it, don't act like y'all ain't. Why ain't y'all going at him? Let me keep going, man. All right. Now it says, do songs with the devil while they fighting with their brothers. See, and the so-called kings steady going at each other, do songs with the devil while they're fighting with their brothers. So you know who that was for.
Yeah.
You know I'm talking about Jay and Nas. Like, bro, like, y'all fighting each other, but he's really the enemy. Lyrically, why don't y'all go with him?
Yeah.
Ether's the greatest motherfucking diss song of ever, and it's against another black man.
Yeah.
Go figure. It's fucking pitiful. We always in some drama, black people.
Yeah.
Let them slide through, then they divide, conquer. And every plantation got a bunch of house niggas. D12. Shady Records with a bunch of house niggas. Obie Trice. Extra security in your front lobby. Better call the Secret Service if you're going to stop me. Paul Rosenberg, you fat fucking pig. I'm holding you responsible for what this bitch did. Because at the end of the day, M just wanted to rap, but he knew he made them tapes. Paul said, don't worry about it. We're going to take care of everything.
Right.
Don't worry about it. I'm going to talk to Benzino. Remember, we had a conversation.
Yeah.
Steve Stout put me on the phone with him trying to squash it, but I taped the conversation and was like, yo, yeah, fuck him and fuck you. Yeah, okay. Just keep going.
Yeah.
All right. Now,
and even on the internet, man, they try to, like, you know, like, take the conversation out of context that you,
of course,
you,
they do.
That you called Paul Rosenberg. He clearly calls,
he called
you.
Me.
And yeah, yeah. It says it in the conversation. Okay. You say it, like, why are you calling me?
Come on. As far it says, call me up. You trying to cop a plea? As far as I'm concerned, you both gonna bleed. Talk about he want to fight. Please, let's set this shit up, and I can knock him to his knees. You let a clown you. How insane is that?
You talking about Insane Clown
Posse? They already clowned him.
What did you think about Insane Clown Posse on No Jumper? They were, Violent J was upset about, like, not being featured in the Source.
I'm saying, look at this. So one day, so first of all, I want to shout out to my guy, Wacko, and with Airheads Weed, my man Wacko. He's an artist, Airheads. And Weed is bomb as fuck. You got a good thing going up in LA. Shout to Wacko. You know, I didn't know about the Insane Clown Posse other than back then. We just felt like it was they was leaning more towards kind of rockish, and it just wasn't, we didn't feel like at the time that it was fitting the culture, what they was doing. Now, that doesn't mean we was right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They was probably...
But you didn't know, like, you know, that it's they were not doing even songs with, like, 3-6 Mafia and stuff, and they were selling,
they,
like, you
they
know...
Were,
like,
they were, and maybe we probably missed the jump on that. No one's perfect. You know what I'm saying? Although the Source, you know what I'm saying? But you know.
And, you know, some people said, like, it would have been smart for you to align with them because they were beefing with Eminem.
No. I didn't have to align with nobody. Yeah. I'm saying, like, I don't got to align with nobody because my thing was, first of all, again, it's not like, let's say Eminem was out the picture and Insane Clown Posse had mask on. And rah, 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 you know what I'm saying? We still probably would have, it would have been a slow roll for us but before we would have latched on to them. I made the mistake with Outkast, you know, and the rating and everything. Like, I you know what I'm saying? But that doesn't mean that personally I know you and dislike you. Right. Now, I didn't know that he was holding all this anger.
You saw that No Jumper clip? Yeah.
But before the No Jumper clip, this guy got in my DMs.
Oh, really?
Now, mind you, me and Wacko, Wacko got an Insane Clown Posse tatted. I'm fucking with Wacko and the weed and everything. So he gets in my DMs, like, I post workout pictures of me in the gym and everything, coming out the pool, and he's like, yo, dude, he says, dude, what the fuck, man? What is this, man? You think you're some type of model or something? I said, huh? He said, man, what's up with all this? Like, you think you're so pretty or something? Had to do with my looks, and why basically am I posing with no shirt? And I'm like, yo, who the fuck are you, yeah. Right? Like, I will come straight to wherever the fuck you are, my nigga. I will fuck you up, bro, however you want to do it. Like, who the fuck are you to try to tell me the type of pictures and the type of shit that I need to be? And, like, are you fucking crazy? So now now he must have called Wacko.
Yeah.
Wacko calls me. Bro, please, we got to straighten this out, bro. But Wacko's in Mexico, bro, man. I love them dudes. I'm like, and I fuck with Wacko. Wacko's white, and I fuck with Wack. That's my nigga, man. I said, Wack, listen, bro, I don't need to say, yo, and Wack agreed. He says, I don't know what the fuck he was on. He said that dude wants to apologize. He didn't mean nothing. I said, so then when we started talking again, you know, he apologized, and he started saying about the Source magazine. I said, look, bro, I said, to be honest, I said, sometimes we didn't see it a lot. I said, you guys were trailblazing a new type of hip hop that maybe we didn't appreciate at the time or whatever. I said, but I would never, like, be in your DMs and disrespect you or publicly try to disrespect you. We've never disrespect him. Once I knew he was going at Eminem, I was like, all right, cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, but still, the white guys with the clown face and trying to be hip hop, it's still,
it wouldn't have fit in the Source in that era.
Me personally, as being from Boston, again, are you making a mockery of hip hop? Like, what is this? I didn't know what it was, and I wasn't feeling it. It's just me. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't mean I was right, and that doesn't mean I was trying to disrespect anybody. But the magazine, I was running my magazine as I thought should be ran. You know what I'm saying? Now, when you think back at it, we should have gave them a little something because they got real big, and I respect them, and I see them, and they work hard, and much respect and love to their success. You know what I'm saying? But this is just the business. It's not personal. You know what I'm saying? He held it personal. And then the way he came in my, I'm like, nigga, get your fat ass in the fucking gym and maybe you'll fucking, you know what I'm saying? And you could, you know what I mean? I'm older than you and look how you look. You know what I'm saying? But we squashed it and I seen how he went on Adam and said what he said. You know what I'm saying? It was cool. When the internet is so fucked up and so unorganized and unstructured and our culture and everything has just gone bad shit crazy, I don't give that shit I don't give it a lot of emotions anymore. Whatever somebody says on the internet about me, I just don't.
No, I feel you. Like,
to me, it don't even.
That makes me think of like the idea of like, you know, white people saying the N word. Because like I know the skinny one. I don't really know. Like, there's Shaggy and Violent J. I don't know which one is which. But the skinny one, he likes.
Bro, we got chased for our lives, being called that. And when somebody called it, we would chase the fuck out of them and beat them up, beat the dog shit out of them for calling us that. So,
well, not necessarily calling them, but like feeling like they're so much a part of that word
yeah, always from a young age stung with me. Now I can see my nigga, and I can call like, Dave, what's up, my nigga? Like, my nigga, I can call a wife, what's up, my nigga? Like, I don't know how it happened. People, whoa, you shouldn't use it, but look, it happened. What's up? I look at it as a word with two different meanings. Nigger. If a white guy calls it to me, it's violation. What's up, my nigga? If I'm saying it, it's cool. Don't ask me why. It is what it is. It's America. This is the fucking land we got brought here. And this is the shit that I'm dealing with. But, you know, I know the difference. And when I was from a young age, I've, you know, we've, chased the motherfuckers from calling us nigga or got chased being called nigga, depending on how many was on each side of the chase. How many guys was on? If it was a gang of white guys chasing a couple, we got to get the fuck out of there. If it's the other side, that's what it was growing up in Boston. It just, that's what it was. You know what I'm saying? Like, white dudes were stomping out black dudes and black dudes were stomping out white dudes, and it was back and forth.
And what about, like, you know, the people, like, you know, Angela Yee, you spoke about, like, how, like, you know, basically, like, you know, she's had something against you and, like, you know.
Hey, listen, Angela Yee, and I don't like to talk against any woman, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
Much love to Angela Yee and everything she's done. It was in the past. Angela Yee was down with the people who was against me and Dave at The Source, writers and radio, and there was, like, 50, 60 people that put a letter out that they didn't want me.
Paul Rosenberg, though, has been instrumental in her career. He helped get her the job at the Breakfast Club, though, too.
That's amazing. You know what I'm saying? Like, my thing is, listen, I'm not here to disrespect anybody's resume and what they've done.
No, I bring that up, though. Like, I feel like, you know, the fact that they would, you know, like, she obviously...
The problem with these people, the Angela Yee's, not just, you know what I'm saying, even the DJ Envy's, the Charlemagne's, and all these guys, the DJ Vlad's, go on and on. At one time, they be coming up to The Source like, oh.
Right.
Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I still was humble. I still was the same guy. You know what I mean? When I used to go to Wendy Wins, we used to go do interviews, and Charlemagne, we'd go get the coffee and everything. I wouldn't be like, you know what I'm saying? What's up, bro? How you doing? I would give him conversation. When DJ Envy would walk down to our office and want to hang out in our office all day, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Or try to let me listen to his beats or something, you know what I mean? Or DJ Clue when he was Steve Stout's assistant in the coffee room. Like, all these guys, and it's no disrespect to none of them.
Yeah.
Because, man, I got love for Clue. I mean, that's my brother. I watched Clue's whole climb from that, and I'm proud of him. But the Envy's, they get a little arrogant, and they think that they're God's gifts. Yeah. Charlemagne seems like he's coming, seems like he started, and it seems like he's getting humbled. See, humility goes a long way with me, because I don't give a fuck who you are right now. Not too many people can say anything about me, because at one point they was all under me, and that's just what it was. And I don't mean in life. I mean as far as. My resume was fucking ridiculous at one point. My bag was big.
You're a producer, and stuff and everything. Like, you know,
it just was like this was pre artists, this was pre internet.
Your accomplishments. And I was running. Like,
listen, the internet niggas got me pre internet. I was running shit, and that's just what it was. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah, people don't give you like enough credit, man.
I don't need it. God's seen it. And people like you and other things. Listen, man, one thing about me, I never live for credit. When The Source magazine, I never got credit for half the 75% of shit I did. You know what I'm saying? As long as the bag's right, as long as I'm healthy, as long as my niggas is, my family, I'm good. I'm a type of person that when people are happy, I'm happy. When a few people are mad, then now I'm fucked up. So I got to make sure everybody's happy. And I carried that load. I wore that, you know what I'm saying, cape, you know what I'm saying, for a long time.
Prodigy, man, one of my favorite rappers, man. Like, he
rest in peace to my dear friend and brother Prodigy.
He talks about in his audiobook going to your house and giving him two beats, like Hangman Productions.
Yeah, the one with Nori, where they did on Prodigy's HNIC album, and another one with him and then we did a lot of stuff with. You know, the Infamous Mob, you know, the group that they had. Like, we used to always kick it with them. Like, a lot of my influences come from Mobb Deep, you know, musically, rapping. You know, when I did Bang to This, that influence came from Mobb Deep. That was my first big solo record that Flex was dropping bombs on in New York. So, man, like, Prodigy is one of the top MCs dead or alive in my book and will always be.
Like, you know, you got a song with Pac, too. Like, you know,
I was in the studio with Pac, man. You know what I'm saying? It was Freddie Fox's. Shout to the legend Bumpy Knuckle, Freddie Fox. We signed to Flavor Unit, and it was going to go on Fox's album. And song never came out. But, you know, Fox ended up giving me the song, and then I tried to put it out under a different beat, an updated beat. Years went by, and Suge cleared it, but Afeni didn't. And then she ended up suing us when I put it on my album. I put out on the Arch Nemesis album, and we got sued, and we gave 150, but it's Afeni, you know? You know what I'm saying? I felt proud giving Afeni 150,000.
Yeah, man, that's amazing. Like, you know,
and Pac was cool. Pac came in, was cool. He had Mo Preem, Alamo, the DJ from Brand Nubium, and rest in peace to Stretch. And they came in there, it was in Queens, Power Play Studio, and man, that shit was it was lit. You know what I'm saying? He did a whole like a skit at the beginning of the song. It was called Killer. You know what I'm saying?
Hold that thought. Press record again.
Yo, that's Chucky right there. Fucking Chucky. Did you know that Chucky was from Hackensack?
I did not.
Yeah, Chucky was from Hackensack. Yeah, my girl, she loves fucking Chucky. When she told me he was in Hackensack and shit, she was like, "This with Charles Lee Ray." Yeah, it was a real guy from Hackensack, New Jersey.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, man, Chucky's from Hackensack.
Yeah, so. That's wild. Yeah, my daughter, like, she's really into that. Like, she likes the Chucky movies.
Yeah,
it's wild.
Yeah, man, but hip hop, man. Where would I be without hip hop, bro? Where would I be? I'm 58 years old. I'll be 59 in July.
It's still relevant, man. Like, you know, still, like, you know, ringing bells.
I would like to think so. You know, man. My son loves the shit out of me. You know, Zeno, you know what I mean? I mean, as long as I'm relevant to Zeno, when he sees me, he goes crazy. You know, everything else is a blessing. And I truly don't take the love I get for granted. You know, wherever I go, I'm mobbed. And people, and it's not just love. People light up.
Yeah.
Like, it's like I'm part of their family. Or they know me, or I lived in their project. So I grew up with them. Like,
me and my wife, we used to watch Love and Hip Hop, like, you know, and stuff. That was everything. And, like, kind of, like, you know, rooted for you. You were one of my favorite characters on the show.
That was an experience. Love and Hip Hop was definitely, it was something that I didn't know was going to happen. You know, Stevie, you know, South of Sleazo, it was something that Stevie was doing, and I was taking him to the set.
Yeah.
And he would have his mic on while we smoke, you know, during the breaks. And then we'd talk, and then one day they just came by, knocked on my window. I'm in the car. Would you say that in front of a camera? And that's, like, the first scene where you see us saying, "Yo, Sleaze, you gotta be monogamous." Monogamous. I just came up with that in my head because, you know, he really was trying to juggle two relationships at the same time. And people seen what happened on camera, but if you could have only seen what happened off camera, that shit was real, man. Sleaze, he was really going through that situation. And I think it's the first time that prior to that, everybody kept their main and their side chick. You would never mind on TV, you wouldn't know about it in real life.
Yeah.
This nigga brought it to TV. And he kind of reshaped reality TV, you know, for the culture. Like, everybody's using that
model,
that blueprint, that model. I call it the triangle offense. Yeah. You know, he's Phil Jackson.
Yeah. Man, what do you love about, like, living in Atlanta, man? It's a great city. Like,
it's a black city.
Yeah.
That's number one. It's a black city. And you really could live here in and you could have privacy if you want. And you could live here, and then you could be seen if you want. So you have that. You have choices here. In some cities, you have no choice.
Right, right.
You know, so nothing. What they have to offer, you got to deal with. But there's choices here. You know, you could be ducked off, or you could be right on Front Street. You could go to a chill lounge with nobody there. You could go where everybody's at. You know what I'm saying? If you want to go to the hood and shit be wild, you can go there. If you want to go to the nice part, you can go there. You know, I like being places where you have choices to make, because that's what life is. If you're in a place where there's no choices and everything is kind of like a one dimension type thing, then that kind of takes away from living in life, you know.
Yeah, man, I love Atlanta. Like, you know, I always come here. I lived here briefly, but
I like growing a Kroger or Publix.
Right, right. What caused you to move here to Atlanta?
Stevie, I was living in Miami. Was like, man, I'm coming up there for 2 weeks, fuck with you. And then ended up, man, being on Love and Hip Hop and didn't turn around, just stayed here. And, you know, the cost of living was way cheaper than Miami.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like,
you know what I'm saying? Like, in Miami, I love too. You know, I love Miami and the people of Miami. But Miami is kind of one-dimensional. It's either the beach and clubs, and that's it. You know, you get burnt out of Miami easy. If you don't have, like, a real structure, some organization in your life, you'll burn yourself out in Miami. Atlanta, there's a few things that you can do as far as work, party, play, athletics, workout, trails. There's beautiful trails in Atlanta that people don't really realize. You know, it's a great workout community here. Great workout community. You know, of course, there's the wildness of the clubs, and you know what I mean? But right now, this is the heart of the culture. And it's been like that since, shit for a minute now. I mean, it started with Andre coming to the Source Awards saying the South got something to say. And it looked like they ain't turned around ever since. So I'm in my 10th year here. I have a son. Zeno was born in Atlanta. Well, he's not a Grady baby, but he's a Northside baby. And yeah, so you know, it's I'm happy to be a part of the culture. I've been here a decade now, so you know. I don't know if they consider me a ATL-ian, but you know. There's a really dope that Ryan from the AJC, his name is also Ryan. He did a documentary on the Atlanta music scene, and he started it from that night, and they interviewed me. And they have amazing Atlanta artists, right? It was 1,000 people that showed up for the premiere. I was in Miami at the time a few months ago, and when I seen it, I'm the first person that comes on. And the way he started was he kind of started from that night at the Source Awards. So I was the first person. And it made me feel good because, you know, Atlanta, I've lived in Miami, I've lived in LA, New York, of course, Jersey, Boston. And, you know, being that Atlanta is so popping, and, you know, I came down as far as loving hip hop, because loving hip hop was a real situation in Atlanta. So I feel like I'm part of the community and a lot of people down here. I got a lot of great friends down here. And, you know what I'm saying? I made a lot of, you know, good people and networked with a lot of good people, and I think they consider me one of theirs at this point, you know. But I'm always gonna be from Boston. I'm a Boston nigga. Okay. That'll never change. I'm a four corner nigga from the day I die.
Man, like it was really sad, like, you know, to see, like, you know, you get shot at your mother's funeral.
Yeah.
That's
well, I mean, it would have been sadder if I'd have got killed. Yeah. Not only did I make it, you know, I still was filming on Love and Hip Hop. What people don't know is that I had to go recreate scenes because we was filming the season, and that was a big part of the scene when it happened. So my arm, I couldn't even move it.
Right.
And they had me doing scenes where I had to like rush to the hospital, but I had to hold my arm a certain way so people wouldn't know that it was fucked up. So, you know what I'm saying? That was challenging. You know, I got through that. You know, that was a situation. That was a family situation.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was unfortunate. I did get to go to the wake and talk to my mom before, you know what I'm saying, she got with God, and I was happy about that. And, you know, losing a mother is the main situation in this, and you'll never get over that. What took place in that, that's just the devil's work, and I don't pay attention to it. I've been through so many.
The celebrity makes, like, family relations harder? Like,
now, black families are just destroyed all in all. Whoever has the money in the black family is going to get all the hate. Doesn't matter. Your new enemies are your friends and your families. Whoever has money, the new enemies are the ones close to you. Back in the day, it was, you know, niggas that lived down there, or niggas over there. Who's that nigga? Well, you know, those are your enemies. Those are, you know, who the fuck is that? Now it's the people close to you. You know, when you get money, then you're going to see how everybody will turn on you. And that's just what it is, man. And, you know, it's no excuse, but, you know, it's not necessarily I blame black people anymore, because we've been conditioned to hate each other. And we've been conditioned to be so close to each other that when one person does break away.
Crabs in a bucket mentality.
I don't even want to call crabs in a bucket. It's just struggling people that's just, like, frustrated because they don't got theirs. And, I wasn't like that, you know. But at the end of the day, when you have millions of struggling people, that's the mindset you're going to get. And it's not necessarily our fault. We was brought here. We was beat. We was raped. We was conditioned to hate. We was pit against each other. And everything that they did to this, it's all coming into fruition within us now. So, you know what I mean? I don't harp on that shit. I've been shot a few times. I got shot one time in Four Corners with a shotgun, but I had a bulletproof vest and it cracked my ribs. Damn. And that was a motherfucker. That hurt more than anything. Then the couple of times I got shot, I still got bullets in me from that. I got shot 3 times, but that one time because back in the day, all we had was shotguns and revolvers. We didn't have all these fancy guns. Not too many niggas had ARs and all that. The most might have been a Tech or maybe an old Mac, but mostly it was pump shotguns, and niggas was sawing them off and carrying them with trench coats. Like, Boston was notorious for that.
Right.
Man, came to Big Daddy T's in Four Corners. I'm over there by the fucking Galaga machine, and boom, that nigga hit me hard. He was coming to kill me. And I got touched and broke my shit, broke my ribs up. And, you know, I survived it, man. I've survived a lot. A lot of my niggas didn't. And I mean a lot, not just a few. I got four on my arm, that guys in my group and my brother. But, I mean, I'm talking guys who I grew up with from a kid, over 100 guys all over the city that are murdered, not just, and now guys are dying from natural causes. So, I mean, come on, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't complain. I've had a good run. My kids are financially independent. Yeah. None of them have a felony. I got four kids.
That's
a
amazing. Daughter. Yeah.
And I got, well, Zeno's 8, but Taj is 20, and Coy's 26, and Ray Ray's 30, and none of them got a felony.
Yeah, that's a blessing, man.
Man, listen, man, I'm thankful to God. I don't want to be the one complaining, because God don't like that shit anyway, man. You keep complaining when things are decent, then God's going to make them worse. You got to be grateful for just being here, man. And whatever you don't got, man, it'll come back around as long as your heart's in the right place. You know, the way I look at it is like I was in the front of the line and shit happened, but God didn't put me in the back of the line. He put me in the middle. You know what I'm saying? I got to wait in line like everybody else, and I take that. So the last maybe 7-8 years been, you know, not, you know, the shit. I've been, you know, getting money at 13. You know, my father was in the mob, and I was working for him. And from there, I was making my money way before the Sauce got their money in the streets of Boston. So I've been on a good run for a long time. It was only the last maybe 7 years that have been a struggle for me. And it's okay, because I know struggle. And maybe my struggle probably wouldn't be, my struggle would probably be like, damn, you know what I'm saying? Because I still maintain, you know what I'm saying? I still fly, I still keep a good look. I still, you know, smell good still, you know what I mean? But, you know, as far as having millions and houses and cars, no. But, you know, I didn't know the management of money. I was a hustler, and a true hustler is I'm going to spend everything I got, go treat me and everybody, and because I know I'm going to go get some more work, and I'm going to go get it again, and I'm going to go hustle again. I'll be out there all day tomorrow and all night. That's how I took life, and you can't take life like that. I was getting so much money from everywhere, from music, from the Source, from everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I was giving it away, but I just thought that, hey, I think tomorrow's going to be more, and tomorrow's going to keep coming. Although we made a lot of money, but there was a time where shit hit the fan and we lost it, and I lost it. But I wasn't ashamed of myself. I didn't hold my head down. I went right back out there in the streets, and, you know what I'm saying, my head up, and I'm right back out there with the people. As long as you're with the people and the people fuck with you, you'll always be able to get money. There's too many ways to get money, and that's just what it is.
Yeah, like, you know, I see you doing a lot of things. Like, you know, like, you got a security company. And
I just partnered up with Bolsky Security, me and my man Reef, Power Move, shout out to them. You know, I mean, you know, these guys, they're licensed and bonded in mostly every city in America, in all the states, the ones that, you know, with the laws mm-hmm. that permit. And bodyguards and you know, military and great guys, strong guys, you know what I'm saying? You know, good at protecting people. So, you know, I mean, you know, like, one thing for sure is in this world, people need protection.
100%, yeah.
You know? And it's crazy because God protects me. When I go around, I'm by myself. I used to travel with an army of niggas.
Right. Those are almighty RSO.
To travel with an army of niggas. But, you know, when things change and everybody grows up, it ain't like that. And everybody got kids. And that becomes your army. So when I go do my stuff, man, now, you know, I don't have the money now to really be paying guys to come with me. If I had the money, you know, guys would be with me. Maybe not that many. You know what I'm saying? But I always like to bring somebody in, you know what I'm saying? Get them out the hood. It's always good. I always felt like I got to see so much because I got the fuck out the hood out there. I was the one supplying everybody with everything, the money and the cars to drive out and the food and everything. We wasn't making no money at first, but I was the one driving out of town and doing interviews and, you know, getting the records pressed. And that was all my money. You know what I'm saying? So I just invested in myself, and it made me see the world and see things other than your block. You got guys that put their tippy toes in the water and they never want to cross that river and stay on their block forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've got to see so much because I got the fuck out my hood at an early age. And it's good to see other things because then you want to keep seeing more things and keep going further with it.
Yeah. Do you feel like for rappers, like, it's good for them to travel, like, with a lot of people?
Yes, you have to because your mind is opening up. Believe it or not.
No, not travel. I'm talking about, like, traveling with a lot of people, like an entourage. Well, people in the entourage that cause trouble.
Great question. These days, the entourage, I don't know. It's hard to control grown-ass men.
Yeah.
And it's hard to control grown, immature men. And if some of the guys are immature and some of the guys are street guys and they don't want papa, then you're going to be liable for these guys.
Yeah, you then you know, I think about like, you know, the Tupac like sexual assault situation and stuff like, you know,
I can go situation to situation. Yeah. There's so many situations where artists have suffered because of the guys that they were with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like that with us. Like I was, you know, my guys trusted me to lead them, and you know, and I was paying everybody good.
You have a reputation as a leader. I heard, like, you know, I don't know if this is true. Maybe you can verify, but you were the reason that the murder rate, like you and me, was so low in Boston because you talked to the top shot callers. And
1 year it was at 90, 100. The next year it was 30. I had put together a project called the Wise Guy Project, where I went to each project and blocks in the hood, the worst spots that have been beefing with each other for all these years. Just grabbed like the best artists from there, because everybody raps. I just grabbed the best, put a compilation. I got them a deal, distribution deal on Def Jam. I got them a deal with Avirex Jackets, and I got them some money. And you know what I'm saying? It just happened that we kept the violence down that year. And that's when they called it the Boston Miracle, and I never got no credit from the politicians.
Right, they took the credit.
Yeah, Bill Clinton came down, gave Boston a bunch of money because they was the model city. But hey, you know what I'm saying? Again, I don't do things for credit. We saved some lives, and I put money in niggas' pockets. I put them on these guys. I sent three tours. One went to the Ohio Midwest area, the other went to the Texas area, and the other one did New England. And I was putting guys together who purposely didn't like each other, purposely, so that they could be together. And you know what I mean? It was an experiment.
What was it like about Boston, though, that was like a lot of hip-hop acts would skip over Boston, like in the 90s?
There was no radio. There was no culture. There's no radio station there. There's no culture. Everything we're doing on the outside and everything. You know what I mean? There's a big show like the Fresh Fest, we have to drive to Providence, Rhode Island, because Boston's not going to show it at the Garden. They just stifled, they suppressed, they held down black culture. And not just hip-hop, but African art stores and African libraries gone. They did that shit on purpose. They just fucking raped us for our culture there, and just, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, shit. If it wasn't for us, like, really putting our foot down and just going there and taking what we wanted and doing what the fuck we wanted, and we paid a price for that shit. You know what I'm saying? Up there in Boston. Got sued by the police and all kind of shit. Like, I was targeted. You know what I'm saying? Many times.
Right, yeah, like the hip-hop police. Like
Many times. The gang task force up there, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, do you feel like, you know, I know, like, the criminal justice system is just, like, unfair for, like, African-Americans, like, you know, minorities.
It's unfair in the country. In Boston, it's impossible. It's a whole level of, different level of unfair.
Right, they can hold you dangerous for 120 days, just, like, you know, because it's common.
They got my brother on a body now, Free Porky. They got my brother Damone locked up. But the way they do it is they could just, with no bail, they could just hold you.
Yeah.
They can just go fish.
Yeah, just continue.
You just sit there.
Yeah, continuation. Yeah. And they try
with
to
no bail. Yeah. Imagine that.
They do that. I think that's like, you know, insane.
It's unconstitutional.
Yeah,
to say the least, it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, like that. It's a lot of people. Like when I was like in Middlesex and stuff, there was like people and stuff. Like, you know, they were holding them, like, you know, they'd be on a murder.
He's been locked up for like 7 months, no bail, no nothing. They'll hold him for like 2 years.
Yeah, and then be like, you give him a plea.
I know guys that have been held for like 3 years and they end up getting out when there was no evidence. They finally let him out.
Yeah.
Fucked up.
That's insane. You know, you were actually indicted by like the IRS.
Yeah, well, it was the federal government. They had me under investigation. First, it was a criminal investigation. In the feds, there's criminal, then there's the taxes, the IRS. They're two separate officers, but they're both federal. The first investigation was the charges were money laundering, extortion, running a drug enterprise, and two murders. And they had offered me 25 years. So they continued to investigate me for like a couple of years, spent a few million dollars. At that time, I was living in New York and Jersey. And we was making a lot of money at the source that time. So that shit fell apart. They interviewed over 100 people. They was pulling niggas out of Fed joints and everything. They just couldn't connect the dots. But they ended up hitting me on tax evasion because our accountant that worked with us for 5 years wore a wire to get me locked up. And I ended up taking it to trial. The only reason I took it to trial, because they offered me 3 years. If I took it to trial, I would be able to stay out for a year. Coy had just been born around that time. She was just around like 1 or 2, and I wanted to stay more time with her. And yeah. So I ended up taking the trial and won. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the whole thing was this guy's running around the office saying, yo, we got to do your taxes. They wanted me to say, fuck them taxes. I ain't doing my taxes. I'm saying, well, do the taxes. Talk to Dave and do the fucking taxes. Why do you keep coming to me? I knew something was up. I just couldn't put it together. He was wearing a clip-on as the radio. Now, yeah. Imagine that. We give him this nigga $150,000, white guy. 36-year-old white guy, half Jewish, half Italian, lived in Jersey. Giving him $160,000 in a car allowance or a clothes allowance. And, yeah, he was trying to get me locked up. And they approached him. He went to Dunkin' Donuts, met with the feds, and said he thought it would be like an adventure or something. I don't know what the fuck he said. It was some stupid shit, but there was no reason for him to do that. Me and him was always cool. I didn't have too much conversation. His office was next to Dave. When I come up there, I never had an office, so I come up there. Hey, what up, George? We talk Patriots and Jets, and I would keep it moving.
Yeah, like, yeah, I saw that on the No Jumper, man. How proud does it make you feel like as a father, like, you know, to have, you know, like, kids, like, you know, Coy LeRae obviously is the famous one.
I mean, even more prouder as a street guy and a guy that's done this his whole life. I mean, Coy and Ray Ray's been around Tars. They've been around studios their entire life. I've had studios in my houses and studios and had so many, their entire life. And then when I go to studio, then they come with me. And they've been around guys and they've been around all kind of shit. And they've seen it. And you know what I'm saying? I've always was a kind of old school father. You know what I'm saying? Stern in a lot of certain things, you know? And you know, there's nothing better than, you know, not getting a call that your kid's locked up or some crazy shit's happening.
Yeah.
Like, Coy's doing an amazing thing, man. She bought her own house. My son Ray Ray got his own house. Like, they're all doing it all from hip-hop. Ray Ray was signed when he was 9 years old with Baby Pun's son. Yeah, they had a deal. Jimmy Iovine gave him $500,000. You know what I'm saying? He was 9. And Coy, I think, was like 3. No, she wasn't even born, I don't think. Let me see. 20, yeah, Coy, I think, was 3 years old. So, you know, and they got different mothers. So, you know, there's nothing better than that. I'm be honest. People can say what the fuck they want to say. I raised all my kids. Been the only father that they've ever had. They stayed with me like 5 months out the year when I wasn't with their mother. Yeah. So I don't give a
very fuck. Involved, man.
I don't
like,
give
yeah.
a flying fuck.
People who try to twist the narrative
a
and
flying
stuff. It seemed like you were a deadbeat. You
I don't
like,
give a
yeah.
flying fudge cake what people say about me when it comes to that, because not one of them people were there with me when
100%,
I was taking
yeah.
care of my kids. So, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, Benzino, man. Like, thank you so much for, like, coming
on,
through.
Come on, Ryan. This was great, man. I love this, man. I'm yeah. going to really
we're going to do this again, man.
Like, I'm going to repost this whole thing, man, for real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime, man. We talk about current events, man. I'm here, brother, man. And very smart. Proud of you, man. When you said you went to Harvard, man, I'm proud of you for that,
man.
Not
yeah.
not too many melanated guys
yeah.
that went through them.
Man, you
and kept it, and you haven't changed. You still, you know yeah. what I'm saying? I salute you for that, brother.
Oh, yeah, you are.
We need great black young minds as yourself, man.
You inspired me to do that. Like, you know what I mean? And stuff. You and Dave Mays, I always, like, you know, admired you and, like, what you did at the source.
Appreciate
and knew that,
man.
Story. Like, Dave Mays, he reached out to
salute
me.
Salute to Dave, man.
He had reached out to me over email, like, and he was like, hey, like, you know, and stuff. He, like, really liked what I was doing in hip-hop, right? I was in hip-hop weekly too, like
on,
once
bro.
Like, you know,
good
when
shit,
I enjoyed, man.
Nah,
so this
bro.
Is a full circle moment for me, man.
On,
like,
man.
Yeah
well, listen, man, I'm really glad, you know, because this was a really great conversation, and as soon as you get it edited or whatever you do, get it to me so I can post it, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's
yeah,
get it
yeah.
going.
I'll tag you, man.
All
right. Like, I appreciate you for coming through.
Appreciate
man.
You having me, bro. Love, man.
Definitely.
And that's it.
Let's get a photo, man.
Yeah.
Like, man, I appreciate you.
Come on, man. I tell you, I kill him, baby. I kill him.
You did. I'm here with Benzino, man. You check out our interview.
Man, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was dope, man. When you dropping it?
Like, you know, soon. ASAP.
Soon.
Yeah.
All right.
I appreciate you. Definitely, let's do it again, man. Like, if you know some other people, man. I love to do business with you.
Right, do me a, yeah, man, I'm ready. Call, take a picture of me on this, because I got to,
yeah.
These guys gave me this, so I'm going to stand in front of that. Oh, shit, look at that, I'm burnt up. Ooh, I hope you know. here smoking weed. Son of a bitch, I'm going to give it to my girl now. There you go. Make sure you get everything, the whole.
The whole fit, yeah. I got you.
Another one. Appreciate it. Call me, bro. I'll be ready whenever you're ready.
I appreciate you.
You call my girl. I'm just showing this real quick. Yeah. I'm going to FaceTime with this. Hold up. Nah, that it was him. The thing I'm leaving now. I knew he was like, "What the fuck?" Charles Lee Ray. Look, it was another one. I told him that he didn't know. Ryan didn't know that he was from Hackensack.
Nah, I didn't.
Which one we got? This one.